Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded June 14th, 2023. Well, over the weekend past, Canada's Prime Minister traveled with Chrystia Freeland to Kyiv and promised, in an address to the Parliament there, his undying support for the war's continuation. Speaking to the Rada, Justin Trudeau pledged $500 million more Canadian dollars, reassuring legislators, quote, "You are the tip of the spear that is determining the future of the 21st century." Well, some future for them and for us. War and rumors of war for generations to come. Mr. Trudeau makes it perfectly clear if the people are to have peace, they'll have to make it themselves. Tamara Lawrence is a fellow with the Canadian Foreign Policy Institute and member of Canadian Voices of Women for Peace. As the Prime Minister was whipping up the furies in Kyiv, Tamara was in Vienna, hammering out the details of the International Summit for Peace in Ukraine's final declaration of international civil society. Tamara Lawrence in the first half. And as well as spending billions on the U.S.-directed proxy war against Russia while Canada's healthcare system crumbles and tens of thousands live in the streets, the government here has too sacrificed relations with Russia, China, Iran, and others for no apparent benefit. Sadly, the official opposition too has failed to perform its duty, as has the unofficial media opposition. What's left but individual efforts in both fields in pursuit of peace? Dimitri Lascaris is a Montreal-based activist, journalist, and lawyer. He served as justice critic in the shadow cabinet of the Green Party of Canada and likewise for the Green Party of Quebec. Dimitri's interviews for TRNN are at therealnews.com, and his articles appear at his website, dimitrilascaris.org, among other places. In April, in an example of DIY diplomacy, Dimitri headed to Russia as a sovereign citizen of our Canada, strong and free, to gain firsthand knowledge of the country and its people. Now, starting June 19th, Dimitri's heading across this country from Halifax to Victoria on the Making Peace with Russia One Handshake at a Time tour. Dimitri Lascaris bringing a message of peace home in the second half. But first, Tamara Lawrence and International Civil Society's unilateral declaration of peace. Well, welcome home, Tamara, and welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris.
Tamara, before we get to the details of the declaration, I missed the CBC's coverage of the Vienna meetings. Who all attended the International Summit for Peace in Ukraine?
There were about 800 people that were registered in person and online, representatives from 37 countries all across Europe, Latin America, Asia and Africa. And I represented the Canadian Voice of Women for Peace and the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom Canada. Before I left, I sent out a press release to about 2,500 journalists and media outlets, letting them know that I was attending this conference. And there wasn't any mainstream media coverage of this conference. While I was in Vienna, our Prime Minister and Deputy Prime Minister were in Kyiv giving more weapons to Ukraine. So I was on a peace mission trying to end this tragic war in Ukraine. And our leadership of this country was in Ukraine prolonging this terrible war. So there was more coverage of what our Prime Minister was doing, sending weapons to Ukraine, than hundreds and hundreds of people from around the world trying to come together to find a solution, find a way to end this war. We were calling for a ceasefire, immediate negotiations, an end to the weapons, and a peaceful architecture to bring in Russia with Europe. So that's what we were trying to do.
Well, what about the European media? The Canadian media went AWOL on your press release, and they didn't cover. I was being facetious, of course, in my question. Was the European mainstream present at the International Summit in Vienna?
Well, I should say that we were very disappointed that there was a lot of negative coverage in Vienna, and people need to be aware or reminded that Vienna is considered a city of peace. It's a city that hosts the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, the OSCE, the Secretariat, and it's in a country that is neutral. Austria has been a neutral country for many decades, and so it was especially chosen to have Vienna host this important international gathering. And the mainstream media, though, in that country portrayed the the conference very negatively. In fact, there was so much negative coverage that it led to the ambassador of Ukraine in Vienna having a press conference to counter the press conference that we had explaining what our mission was, and leading to a deplatforming 2 days before the summit was to be held at the trade union hall. The trade union decided to cancel the contract, and a new location needed to be found within 48 hours. And luckily, we were able to find another location that was able to bring together hundreds of people. But this also caused a lot of negative coverage, as well as some of the people who were attending. So, for instance, Dr. Jeffrey Sachs, who is a well-known economist who has criticized the U.S. role in this war, and members of the European Parliament, people like Claire Daly from Ireland and Tatiana Jadanowska from Latvia. They're members of the European Parliament. They attended this peace summit, and they are working very hard to try to find a way to bring about negotiations and end this war. But they were portrayed very negatively in the media. And so people need to step back and think about, you know, why is it that mainstream media is ridiculing, vilifying a peace summit? All of us are coming, you know, we're calling for an end to the weapons, an end to the killing, and for negotiations so that this war ends, because it's having global implications. And so, you know, peace is being treated in very dangerous by mainstream media, by governments. Even the Austrian government was not very supportive. And so this is very troubling. But we're going to continue to persevere, because we know that peace is the right way. We all need to live together peacefully. And we wanted to try to come together to find a way to do that. And we're going to carry on.
Well, you anticipated my question about the nature of the media attack. What is to ridicule about the notion of peace breaking out? Isn't that supposed to be the desired stable state of things, and war the exception, which it seems to have been turned on its head? I'm very disappointed to hear that the Union Hall, of all venue holders, would turn you away, considering especially what happened at the Union Hall in Odessa in 2014. Those that know anything about the beginnings of the Ukraine conflict will immediately know what I'm referring to there. But who stepped in? I'd like to give credit to those that jumped into the breach and offered you space. Who was that?
So this was a venue that was close to Schönbrunn. It was called the Loyal Saal Hall. I don't know the specific details about that venue, but they did confidently step forward to say that they would host the event, which was great. But people should also know who some of the organizers of this important summit were. I mean, we've got organizers like the International Peace Bureau, one of the oldest peace networks in the world, created about 130 years ago. Code Pink, the International Fellowship for Reconciliation, Europe for Peace, Transform Europe, and the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, Austria. So these are really credible peace organizations that are committed to, like I said, peace, disarmament, nonviolence, and also, you know, these groups have an excellent track record in trying to bring about the resolution of armed conflict. And so the organizers, you know, did an excellent job under very adverse conditions. And it was a really inspiring conference. It was extremely informative and it was empowering. And I came back to Canada with a lot of resources and a lot of contacts and a lot of things that we can do to try to end this war, you know, from a civil society perspective. So there's work for us to do in Canada, because our government, of course, is moving us in the wrong direction. It's prolonging this war by sending more weapons. And now our defense minister is on her way back to Germany to help extend this war.
There's a street not far from downtown here in Victoria, and you'll see it. You'll be in Victoria, incidentally, on Friday, the 23rd of June of this month, just a bit more than a week from today. And you'll see a homeless encampment growing larger by the day, dozens of tents along one of the byways of the city. Meanwhile, the government is spending money hand over fist, buying armaments to keep a war, to throw logs on the fire of a distant war. It really, it beggars belief. The work, you said that, Tamara, that there's work to be done. There was work to be done at this meeting. And two days of being together with like-minded people, there still is debate. And what came out of that, out of the International Summit for Peace in Ukraine, was the so-called final declaration of international civil society. Can you describe a little bit, Tamara, what that is about and what it says? I know you can't go into the whole thing, but...
So out of this summit came this Vienna Appeal for Peace. Now, this was a statement that was primarily developed by the organizers. It was a very difficult process to come together to agree on the exact wording for the statement. But the gist of it is that civil society that came to the summit are calling for an immediate ceasefire and negotiations to end the war in Ukraine. And that is the most important thing. Everybody, you know, came to this conference with that goal in mind, wanting there to be talks to end the fighting and to end the killing. So that's the prime objective of the statement. But the other thing that came out of this conference was there were so many awesome ideas from representatives from different countries. For instance, in Germany, they've done a national petition. I think they're at 700,000 signatures of people who want Germany to stop sending weapons and to start talking. And for instance, in the Czech Republic, the Prague Appeal for Peace, and there have been mass protests. They haven't got any media coverage in Canada, but there have been, 100,000 people on the streets in Prague calling for an end to the war and also an end to NATO. In Italy as well, they are mobilizing to pass a referendum on getting Italy to stop sending weapons and supporting the war through NATO. And there have been mass demonstrations, for instance, in Rome. So what was great to learn at this conference was how people in their various cities and countries are working really hard to build a peace movement, to initiate referendums and petitions and conferences and appeals and other big rallies and demonstrations to try to get a message to the public and to their politicians that we want this war to end. And so I've got lots of contacts, lots of resources, and like I said, I'm ready to work with other Canadians to try to put pressure on our government, on the Trudeau government, to change course and to start promoting an end to promoting peace and ending this war.
I hate to say it, but I haven't seen a lot of evidence that the message of peace, and especially in this Ukraine conflict, but in a larger sense as well, is taking hold in Canada. The rallies that I've attended over these many years, and this has been a century of warfare already, one after the other, have been pretty disheartening. How was the turnout to the conference?
So there was a really good turnout for the conference. The venue was packed, and there was, like I said, representation from really all around the world and some, very high profile people. Current parliamentarians, former diplomats, and there was representation from Russia, from Belarus, from Ukraine, for all across Europe. People coming together, despite the opposition and despite the negative media, coming together with a genuine commitment to wanting to end this war and to work peacefully and collaboratively with each other, with to tackle these really terrible global challenges that we have. You mentioned the homeless encampments in Victoria. Well, they're all across the country. I've got four in my city, and poverty is getting worse in Europe. They talked about this at the conference. Poverty is getting worse right around the world. And, you know, to be able to deal with the poverty and inequality crisis, you know, we need to stop this war. We need to stop investing so much in military spending and in weapon systems. We need to reduce military budgets and invest in our urgent social programs. The other thing is, while we were meeting in Vienna, there's a really important climate conference taking place in Bonn, Germany, the intersessional conference in the lead up to the climate summit in the UAE in November. And we're experiencing in Canada not only homeless encampments and poverty, but raging forest fires and record high heats. You know, we're experiencing the worst of the climate crisis, and we can't be continuing to invest in this carbon-intensive militarism. All of these tanks that we're sending to Ukraine, for instance. When our prime minister was in Kyiv and giving his speech at the Rada, like you mentioned earlier, he also announced that Canada is going to help train the Ukrainian fighter pilots in this fleet of F-16s that they're going to be getting from NATO members. And the military is the worst climate polluter. It uses the most fossil fuel, and it's really terrible for the climate. We can't decarbonize if we don't demilitarize. So that was another issue that we brought up at the conference, that if, you know, people are serious about dealing with the climate emergency, we need to stop carbon-intensive militarism.
Yeah, and I seem to recall that the American military has more emissions than, I don't know, all but the top half a dozen or so countries in carbon emissions for its just regular operations. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Tamara Lawrence. She is a fellow with the Canadian Foreign Policy Institute, a member of the Canadian Voices of Women for Peace, and a PhD candidate in global governance at the Bethesda School of, or for rather, International Affairs at Wilfrid Laurier. And her thesis there, as we're speaking now, is the focus is on climate and the environmental impact of the military. Tamara, I heard you briefly on Eve Engler's Foreign Policy Hour tonight. And you were talking about the forest fires and in Alberta. Well, and meanwhile, the war games and the live fire exercises that the Canadian military undertake in the province there, with foreign governments invited as well to take part, has a very detrimental environmental impact, not only in the moment, but down the road, and making the area more susceptible to these kind of wildfires. Can you explain that?
Back in May, the province of Alberta had 100 forest fires, most of them out of control, declared a state of emergency. Thousands of people were evacuated. Houses were being burnt down. And at that time, the Canadian Forces base in Wainwright near Calgary was conducting one of its largest live fire training exercises. So exploding missiles and shells and grenades, and it was a massive military exercise in the middle of out of control forest fires. It's just so irresponsible. And as well, Canada is in the process of militarizing the Arctic, which is a fragile ecosystem, and it's the fastest warming region on the planet. We're going to be installing more hangars and runways and bases to be able to, you know, fly up north our new fleet of F-35 fighter jets that we are planning on buying. In January of this year, our Minister of Defense announced that Canada is going to be buying 88 F-35s for a cost of $70 billion over this next decade. This is the crucial period that we need to have our emissions by 2030 so that we can avert catastrophic climate change. But our government is locking us into this carbon-intensive militarism that is causing Canada to continue to increase our emissions. Our emissions are rising. Our government has never met one UN Framework Convention on Climate Change target. And the climate emergency is getting worse. Canadians are very insecure because of it. So there's this incoherence between spending so much money on the military that is so destructive for the climate and the environment, and claiming that our military is bringing about security and defense when it's exactly the opposite. It's actually making us much more insecure. It's ruining our environment, and it's diverting resources that we need to deal with the climate emergency and to deal with poverty. So Canadians need to confront this directly. We need to start talking about peace and demilitarization. This is why we need people to get involved in the peace movement. We need Canadians to put pressure on their elected officials to say we want to reduce the military budget, and we want to give peace and the environment a budget.
Does the Liberal government really believe in the climate crisis, or is this just more rhetoric for them? You mentioned on Eve's Foreign Policy Hour tonight that the government of Canada is now budgeting $35 billion annually towards the military that we know of, while only $2 billion towards environmental mitigation, and I doubt much of that is actual mitigation even. So it does beg the question, do they believe in it, or do you think this is just rhetoric that sounds good on the steps of the parliament?
If the Canadian government was serious about the climate crisis, it would immediately stop this war, and it would work with Russia and with China on dealing with the climate crisis that the entire planet is in. And we would not be purchasing a new fleet of fighter jets. We would not be spending $38 billion to modernize NORAD and militarize the Arctic. We would not be buying a new fleet of warships for $300 billion, because we're not just in a climate emergency, we're also in an ocean emergency. They're related, of course, and Canada would not be participating, as it just did with the Nordic countries, on this massive fighter jet exercise that just took place. And Canada would withdraw from NATO, because NATO, I think, is one of the greatest threats to the climate. Right now, NATO is conducting one of the largest air exercises called air defense, flying right now fighter jets and bombers and aerial refuelers and attack helicopters. I mean, they're running this very climate destructive air force exercise just at a time, like I said, that the Bonn Climate Conference is underway. And, you know, we've got these climate emergencies all over the world, record high temperatures in Asia and in the Middle East, and like the forest fires that we've had across Canada. So it's just so irresponsible that our political leadership is prioritizing, you know, war and militarism over, you know, investing in human security, tackling the poverty crisis and the climate crisis.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Twitter feed of Melanie Joly right now, and the minister responsible, it's not just Ukraine. I mean, of course, she's four square behind that, and in a previous tweet was damning anyone that would profit from the Ukraine-Russia war. I mean, that has to be a joke. But she, in this particular instance, is saying that 12 years later, the suffering of Syrians at the hands of the Syrian regime continues. Another proxy war that NATO and the United States sparked using death squads and jihadists to wage war on the government and blame everything on the government that they are attacking. And yet, after 12 years of it and that war starting to wind down, hopefully, here is Canada stoking the fires and imploring the ICC bring the victims to trial. It's past parody.
Yeah, and Canadians should also remember that it was our military that bombed Syria and Iraq from 2014 to 2016. We conducted many airstrikes against those two countries. And then from 2016 to 2019, Canada did the refueling of the U.S.-led coalition airstrikes against Syria and Iraq. really our military has caused so much death and destruction in the Middle East, in Afghanistan, Iraq, and in Syria, and there's been no accountability, and our military operations are extremely environmentally destructive and are really harming people. And there needs to be accountability for what we've done to Syria as well. And our government has never been honest about our role in a regime change operation that we tried in Syria.
And not to mention Libya, of course, and let's not mention that. We're fast running out of time, Tamara. I want to get back to your appearance here Friday, June 23rd, Making Space for Peace, Ending the Russian-Ukrainian War, a conversation with Tamara Lawrence. And Tamara, I'll be talking a little later today with Dimitri Lascaris, and he told me the last time we spoke that you were the inspiration for his trip of citizen diplomacy to Russia that he'll be talking about in a meeting here as well at the end of this month. He'll be in Victoria as a part of his tour, which we'll talk about in the second half. But last November, you went out and you toured Egypt and Russia and Finland and Latvia and Poland and Romania and you, on this effort of citizen diplomacy. Briefly, Tamara, can you give us a preview of what you'll be talking about on Friday the 23rd here in Victoria?
I'm going to be speaking, yes, in Victoria on Friday, June 23rd, but I'm also going to be speaking in Nanaimo the night before, June 22nd at 7 o'clock as well. So there will be two opportunities on Vancouver Island for me to share with Canadians about, you know, my trip to Vienna to participate in this international summit, but also to talk about, yes, my trip to Russia and to throughout Eastern Europe. I was attending the climate summit in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt in November, and I realized that I was able to get a direct flight from Cairo to Moscow, and I've never been to Russia. I really wanted to go, and I wanted to use people-to-people diplomacy to learn more about the country, strategic empathy to listen to what the Russians say about their perspective on this conflict, and then I wanted to find ways to peace build with people in Russia and in Finland and Latvia, Poland and Romania. I also had the opportunity to speak with Ukrainian refugees in Poland, and I met with men from both sides of the contact line from the west and the east of Ukraine, and they had left the country because they don't want to fight each other, and they found jobs at a company, and they said to me that they want this war to end. They are brothers, and this should not be going on, and they don't want these NATO countries to prolong the war. They want it to end. And so I think we really need to listen to the voices for peace, even from Ukrainian refugees, people who attended this peace summit in Vienna, that we need to end the war, and we need to start working cooperatively with all countries to solve our common challenges.
Well, Tamara, again, will be in Nanaimo on the 22nd. That's Thursday, June 22nd coming. And here in Victoria, June 23rd at 7 p.m. I won't give the address, Tamara, because there's some cancel culture going on here. And I'll talk to Dimitri about his Making Peace with Russia event that's been quite secretive about its locations for that very reason. But Tamara will be here, Making Space for Peace, Ending the Russian-Ukrainian War. Thanks a lot for telling us a little bit about that today, Tamara. And do you have a website that people can, that they're just furiously scribbling with their pencils, that they can find out more about what's going on regarding your tour and other matters of import?
Well, they can follow me on Twitter. We'll put the information on Wilt Canada and on my Twitter page too. So it's just at Tamara Lawrence, and they can also find out more information at wilpcanada.ca, wilpcanada.ca, wilpcanada.ca.
Thanks a lot, Tamara, for coming on again, and happy journeys.
Thanks very much for having me.
And I want everyone else to stay tuned, because as I said, Dimitri Lascaris is going to be coming straight up in the second half. Thanks again, Tamara. Well, I gotta think that we're not alone.
I'm sitting in my house watching all this happen, and I've arrived to a point where I just can't keep my mouth shut anymore.
Guerrilla Radio, you're not alone.